Good morning, my name is Edmund Sinanolochu. This is Lordio, Conflict of Laws, straight to business. Let's get a conceptual framework of what conflict of laws is. A conflict of laws is a disagreement, a contention, a conflict between two different systems of law. The laws of France and the laws of Ghana, the laws of Argentina and the laws of Burkina Faso, when the disagreement, that is a conflict of laws. Now, it is also synonymous to private international law. The meaning of private international law is a situation when the municipal law of a state is called into question with a matter within a matter involving a foreign element. It also means when a non-state actor, like an individual or a company, contends the jurisdiction of the state in a matter. Good. Now, the laws of a state are the municipal laws. And in Latin, it's called the lex situs. The exception to private international law is that for matters regarding immovable property, we require the lex situs. The lex situs deals with matters regarding the law of immovable property, laws dealing with land. Now, let's go straight to the nature of the conflict of laws. Now, the conflict of laws has to recognize that there's a foreign element. There has to be a foreign element for there to be a conflict. Then two, it has to recognize whether there's a conflict with the laws of Ghana. There's a conflict between the Ghanaian municipal law and the laws of another state. Thirdly, the court determines which system of law should apply. The court has to determine which system of law to apply. Now, within a conflict of laws, when a court determines that it has no jurisdiction, the matter terminates. The matter is moot. It is of no consequence. Right. So now, within the scope of the conflict of laws, we have the jurisdiction, which has to be taken into account. Then we have the choice of law, which has to be taken into account. And then thirdly, recognition and enforcement of foreign judgment and arbitral awards. So jurisdiction, the choice of law, and the recognition, enforcement of foreign judgment and arbitral awards. That's the scope. That's how far-reaching private international law goes. The jurisdiction, does the court have the competency to adjudicate over the matter? Or is it within the geographical remit of a court to be able to adjudicate over the case? Then the choice of law, which system of law so within the country itself, there may be a conflict of law. So the Islam law, municipal law, customary law, common law, is there a conflict between them? Now, it also has to be a recognition and enforcement of foreign judgment and arbitral awards. And recognition of foreign judgment will mean that Ghana recognizes that a judgment has been made in another country and an arbitral award has been given against somebody, and then it can be executed in this country. That is within the scope of private international law. Whether or not we recognize the judgment of the UK with a Ghanaian in the UK, and if that judgment is given, can it be executed in this country? And if there's any arbitration award against a Ghanaian, can it be executed? Can his property be attached? Can it be sequestered against him? Can there be a garnishee order against that person executed in this country? That's within the remit of conflict of laws. So public international law has to do with state actors, okay? So countries. Then private international law has to do with non-state actors or foreign elements, like foreign companies, foreign citizens, right? So earlier on, we spoke about the lex situs and the exception of the lex situs to the law of immovable property. But there's a doctrine, the renvoi doctrine, R-E-N-V-O-I, the renvoi doctrine, which says that with regard to the succession to immovable property, the lex situs takes precedence, but it may differ to a conflict of laws where some other system of law is preferred. The renvoi doctrine. So even though the lex situs is preferred in matters regarding the matters regarding the law of immovable property, in some situations, conflict of laws may be referred to if some other system of law is preferred. Good. Now, why will some other system of law be preferred? This brings us to the topic of domicile. Domicile. So, generally, a person's domicile is the jurisdiction the person has substantial connection to. The law which regulates the personal status of a person is the personal law of that person, and this is generally determined by the person's domicile. So where you have substantial connection to is where your personal law is. So generally, the same principles are used to ascertain a person's domicile for purposes of determining jurisdiction or the applicable law. See the case of Abu Jandeh and Abu Jandeh. So there's a conflict between residence and domicile. So although a person's residence may in some cases determine the person's domicile, the two concepts are conceptually different. They are not the same. So you must have a substantial connection to the place. So the fact that I'm resident in a country for 1 year for studies does not mean that that is my domicile. If I have substantial connection to a foreign country, that is my domicile. Now, types of domicile. We have the domicile of origin and the domicile acquired at birth, which is dependent on the domicile of that person's parents at the time of birth. So within this matter, the place of birth or the residence of that person's parents at the time both of them were born is not relevant in this matter. What is relevant is the domicile of that person's parents at the time the person was born. Per the common law rules for determining domicile of origin, a legitimate child takes the domicile of his or her father. An illegitimate child takes the domicile of his or her mother. Now, when we say an illegitimate child, we mean a child born out of wedlock. But the Ghanaian law does not recognize illegitimacy of a child. Once the father acknowledges ownership of the child, there's no such concept as illegitimacy. Now, domicile of origin is revived once a person abandons his domicile of choice. So your domicile of origin takes precedence once you abandon your domicile of choice. For this, see the case of Udni and Udni regarding the colonel of Scottish domicile origin who fled to France, who was domiciled in England before and fled to France to evade creditors. Now, for legal persons such as companies, they are generally deemed to be domiciled in the state in which they are incorporated or have their registered office. Okay, so domicile of choice acquired. The domicile of choice is acquired when one resides in a jurisdiction with the intention of residing there permanently. Okay, you see the case of Davis and Randall and Omane and Opoku. But the caveat is that a mere statement of intention without supporting evidence of extraneous fact cannot ground an argument that a person has changed his or her domicile. See the case of Simpson and Simpson and Winans and AG. Ramsoy and Liverpool Royal Infirmary, and Mahama Hausa and Baku Hausa. Okay, now let's go to jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is the power or authority of a court to hear and determine a particular matter. Jurisdiction is fundamental since a decision made by a court without jurisdiction may be regarded as a nullity. In Ghana, the jurisdiction of a court is determined by statute and common law principles. The presence of a person within a particular country is often regarded as sufficient basis for a court to assume jurisdiction in a matter involving that person. See the case of Mahorani of Baroda and Wildenstein. So what about residence? Does residence give the court jurisdiction? Where it is established that a person is resident in a particular country, a court in that country can assume jurisdiction in a matter involving that person. The test for determining the residence of an individual or entity is based on statutes and on existent facts at the time the action commenced. See the case of Ackerman and Société Générale de Composition. Now, let's deal with submission. So, presence, residence, submission. These are all factors to determine jurisdiction. A person who accedes to the jurisdiction of a court gives the court the authority to hear and determine a case relating to that person. This may include circumstances where a person files an unconditional appearance to a writ of summons. See the case of Polymex and BBC Builders and Engineers Company Limited. Now, how about conducting business? When an entity carries on business within a country, the business would be subject to the jurisdiction of that country. See the case of Taffer & Co. Limited and Taffer & Co. Limited. So, this begs the question, are people who are not physically present in a country could a court assume jurisdiction over these people? Now, so let's go straight to the topic of service of court processes outside the territorial jurisdiction of a court. So in limited circumstances, people or persons who are not physically present in a country may be amenable to the jurisdiction of a court in that the court has served processes on that person outside of the court's jurisdiction. This is according to the High Court Civil Procedure Rules 2004 CI 47. It provides that the circumstances under which the court processes may be served on a person outside Ghana. See Order 8 of CI 47. So, regarding procedure, there's a big question the courts ask themselves if they should assume jurisdiction. And this comes within the remit of forum non-convenience, a doctrine based on whether it is suitable or appropriate for a court to assume jurisdiction over a person or a matter. So the fact that a lawsuit is pending elsewhere, lis alibi pendens, as a Latin term, for a lawsuit pending elsewhere, lis alibi pendens. The fact that a lawsuit is pending elsewhere may influence the fact that a court would assume jurisdiction, but would not be a decisive factor. The case of Shell Star Container Transport Limited and Kadar Shipping Company Limited, and also the case of Fatal and Fatal. So, when we come to a situation where there's disagreement between parties regarding which law to use, how do we solve such a situation, a disagreement? So, where the parties to an agreement indicate their preferred jurisdiction for the resolution of a dispute, a court outside this designated jurisdiction is likely to decline jurisdiction if an action is commenced outside the specified jurisdiction. So where the parties are agreed, consensus item, during the reduction of the contract into writing on the jurisdiction that the case should assume. In case there was any matter, then the court would decline jurisdiction if the matter is commenced outside that specified jurisdiction in the contract. See the case of Fanmilk Limited and State Shipping Corporation. Now, where the parties to an agreement indicate that any dispute shall be resolved by an arbitration, a court is likely to stay proceedings for the parties to go to arbitration if an action is commenced in court before the arbitration. See the case of BCM Ghana Limited and Ashanti Goldfields. Then there are people or entities that are immune to the jurisdiction of municipal courts. Foreign governments. See the NML case, NML capital case. We have diplomats who are also immune. See the case of Garcia and Tareja, and also international organizations. See the case of GTZ, GmbH, and Africa Legal Aid. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you on the next podcast.